With over 50 civil conflicts raging around the world, aid workers are struggling to respond to growing emergency needs and develop resilience to climate change. At the same time, many traditional donors of humanitarian aid are cutting their funding. Last year, the World Food Program shut down its primary programs in Syria, cutting off millions of people in need of food aid. Meanwhile, the United States is expected to have its budget for many programs across all humanitarian sectors in 2024. With life-saving programs on the line, aid actors are left without the means to address the deeper cuts of climate change, even though conflict-affected areas are the most vulnerable to its effects. I'm here with Natasha Hall, Senior Fellow at the CSIS Middle East Program, to discuss the challenges of addressing immediate humanitarian crises while also mitigating long-term environmental risks. Why is it so difficult to fund and develop resilience to climate change in conflict-affected communities?
Well, while increased climate financing is really important, the reality is that financing is now competing with a lot of other priorities. And this dilemma is especially acute in the Middle East, a water-stressed region that continues to rely on humanitarian and stabilization aid to alleviate the many conflicts and crises there. So during different interviews that I've conducted, you know, humanitarian workers in places like Syria are forced to choose between funding children's education and tents for displaced people. And funding scarcity isn't the only barrier to addressing climate change in these places. It's especially hard to carry out climate security programs in conflict-affected states. In areas where warring parties have impeded the simple delivery of food baskets, putting in place a comprehensive framework for equitable and sustainable adaptation practices can be close to impossible.
If actors like the United States continue to cut their funding for humanitarian aid, how can aid organizations adapt?
Well, more funding is definitely needed, but in the meantime, organizations and governments are going to have to do more with less. Aid organizations could actually develop the equivalent of a NAP, or a National Adaptation Plan, with local communities. NAPs typically assist countries in developing comprehensive medium to long-term climate adaptation. But while assistance provided by a NAP is important, most Middle Eastern countries still do not have one, and those marked as fragile or conflict-affected often don't have a government capable or willing of taking it on.
Why is it so important for aid agencies to collaborate with local communities?
Well, if local communities and aid agencies better coordinated around shared plans during difficult times, they could ensure that aid programs are supporting resilience and that emergency responses don't actually do further harm to the environment that people depend on. So fully mainstreaming climate change adaptation into the existing interventions is not only necessary for financial reasons, but failing to consider climate impacts for any project may nullify the effects of climate financing. For example, efforts to increase water supplies for farmers and lower the use of diesel water pumps have led humanitarian professionals to provide solar panels in countries facing long-standing humanitarian crises such as Yemen and Sudan. However, the problem is that solar panels decrease the cost of pumping water, leading to a dramatic depletion of groundwater. And in many cases, those who could afford both diesel and solar pumping ended up using both to dig deeper for groundwater and pump longer, avoiding any positive climate outcomes. So instead, donors and local communities could coordinate to collect and act on data on groundwater levels and quality. And by training citizen scientists to monitor water levels and quality, humanitarian agencies would be addressing other issues such as livelihoods and sanitation.
Although these examples are compelling, they describe how groups can build climate resilience in long-term interventions. Is it possible for aid agencies to mitigate environmental concerns more quickly in humanitarian emergencies?
Of course, during humanitarian emergencies, aid groups can plan programs that target multiple problems, including climate security. For example, rather than replacing tents and reacting to spikes in waterborne diseases after predictable winter floods every year, aid agencies could support public works programs to construct simple drainage systems in displaced persons camps to reduce the threat of flooding overall. And additionally, diverting the floods to basic stormwater harvesting systems could also provide much-needed water for crops and livestock in the summer.
How can governments and international bodies support and protect climate resiliency efforts in conflict-affected communities?
Well, first, there needs to be guardrails for climate financing so that central governments do not divert aid funding, as is the case somewhat notoriously with the Syrian government. Second, donor states will need to put diplomatic weight behind comprehensive climate adaptation plans in complex environments. This programming will require gaining access to and the trust of very traumatized and marginalized communities, and often changing the behavior and policies of warring parties. So to do so, influential governments, potential investors, and the aid community will need to work together to do more than fund climate adaptation and mitigation. They're going to need to exercise diplomatic muscle to make such endeavors successful in conflict-affected countries.
Thank you for joining me, Natasha.
Thanks, Leah.